Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the chalk to my Q-tip is Dave Vitti.
Hello, mate.
How are you?
Oh, that's a lovely line, isn't it?
Well, you know, like we try and tailor it to the guest in hand, and I thought, well, what else can I be? I must be the chalk to your Q-tip. So we'll go with that. It sounds slightly wrong, but I think we can get away with it just about.
I like it. I like it a lot. Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your bike, your car, or even your home insurance. So then, Dave, what's been going on? The sun's out for the first time in a couple of days. The pubs are open.
Indeed. Sun's out, guns out. At the time that we record this, and you're allowed to go out for dinner again, and you're allowed to go to the pub, which is quite exciting. So, yeah, it's just nice to have the world that we know getting back to normal slowly, isn't it?
Well, fingers crossed it keeps going in that direction, eh? Right, so today our guest is quite simply a sporting legend. And when I say a sporting legend, I'm talking old school. A sportsman with real character and quite possibly, in fact, it's not quite possibly, in my opinion, he is the most naturally talented professional in the game of snooker that this country has ever produced. It is, of course, the one and only Ronnie O'Sullivan. Hello, pal, how are you?
How you doing, mate? You all right?
Yeah, I don't think that intro's strong enough, actually, for you.
Oh, it's a bit heavy, that one. We're a bit of pressure there, mate.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I think it's all true. I genuinely do. It's we both think it's true. Both big fans, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show, Ronnie.
Yeah, no, nice to be on the show. Nice to be on the show. Love my car.
Well, we did a bit of work together at Fifth Gear.
Yeah, I loved it, mate. It's fantastic.
Yeah, good old days. Good old days. So, mate, what have you been up to?
To be honest with you, I've just got back into my fitness, but last March, I was like a week into sitting on the sofa and thinking, this could go either two ways. I could end up obese and having to lose 7 stone in a 2 years' time, or I can get myself really fit and come out and enjoy this, however long we're going to be locked down for. And I chose the healthier option because, you know, I could go both ways, and I didn't fancy the first option, which was eating myself to death and just moulding into my sofa.
I suppose it's enviable what you've done, and you're in the minority, I think. Because I think most people, when lockdown happened last year, went down the route of just thinking, I'm just going to eat, and I'm just going to drink, and I'm just going to stay at home. And actually, what they would then do, which is probably what I did, you get to the point where you just think, God, I'm just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. My jeans don't fit me, my shirts don't fit me. And then you do it. But actually, to have taken that tack from the first off, there's a lot of foresight, I think, in that.
Well, I've done what you've done for about 6 years. Before when I was younger, I did need a lockdown. I was just out of, you know, just hammering it for 6 years. So I kind of knew where it could go from past experiences, and I thought, let's try and preempt that and be a bit more proactive and try not go down that road. So I know it's tough, but I knew the two options. Like within a week of being on that sofa and watching Sky News for 24 hours a day, I was like, oh, this could turn out awful.
So Dave, you've let something out the bag there, because in all the little chats, you've never disclosed that you put a bit of timber on last year.
I did. And do you know what? It was more recently. It wasn't a last year thing. I got to the point, I had to do a podcast, and it was a visual podcast, and it was earlier on this year. I think it was in about February. And I just remember seeing myself on this screen with a whole load of other people. And I just thought, God, you look huge. You look really bloated and just... Ugh. So that was it. I thought, right, beginning of February, I'm going to do something about this. And I got out on my bike and I stopped eating crap every day and put down the crisps and the problem is, when you're working from home, you're far too close to the biscuit tin. That's my biggest problem. And so I thought I'd cut all that out, and then I've lost about 1.5 stone.
Lovely.
Since February.
Good on you.
You know, and I feel better for it.
Yeah.
Aside from fitness then, Ronnie, sort of last year, for example, how do you keep yourself occupied other than going to the gym? How do you find that you just don't go stir crazy rattling around at home for months on end?
Because I work so hard, I kind of don't give myself a hard time if I actually do nothing, because, you know, I'm so busy, like, practicing, you know, doing some different projects with my management and stuff like that. And, you know, like I said, I've got my Keep Fit, my running, I've got, you know, kids and a partner and spend time with them. So I don't actually get a lot of downtime, but if I do, I just kind of just make the most of it, really. So I suppose in a way, like my friend said, it's just like, let's just try and distract ourselves for as long as we can by just into work, into Keep Fit, into whatever it is you want to do. And, you know, just try and you know, because I'm frightened if I stop, I won't start again, you know. So it's kind of easier just to... I took the Floyd Mayweather approach. I remember years ago he kind of... He had a fight and then got out of shape. And then he said he found it really hard to get back in shape. So he said, well, I'm just staying in shape till the end of my career. And I kind of thought, you know what, it's probably a lot easier if you take that approach. Because, you know, once you take some time out, I don't know about you, Jason, but, you know, it's really hard to motivate yourself to want to get going again. So, you know, and sometimes I've had to hire someone to come and live with me for a week just to make me get back here because... I've taken so much time off and I'm just like, I just don't want to face having to go in and have to get back in the grind, you know?
It makes you think about people like Ricky Hatton and the way that he used to, I mean, I know obviously a completely different sport to either of you two, but the way that he used to either be in training mode or very much not in training mode. Yeah. You know, there was no kind of constant thing whereby he would always keep himself at a certain level. When he wasn't in training mode, he went for it. And then can you imagine getting that point where you start on a Monday morning and think, I've got to shift about 3 stone here.
Yeah, hard work. Mm. I think you're right, Ronnie. Best to just keep the pan on the boil. Or on the simmer, rather than letting it go cold and have to get the thing cooked up again.
Yeah, it's easier to go to a simmer to a boil than like pure cold to a boil. If that makes sense, you know what I'm saying? That gap to breach is a lot easier.
Ronnie, talk to us about cars. Then, obviously, we know that you're a big petrol head. Where did it all start for you? What are your early childhood car memories?
I think it started. My dad tells a story. He said that we used to have a Mini. He said one day, so I looked out the window and he was sitting in the Mini. He was only about 5 or 6, trying to sort of start the car up. So I think from an early age, I always had this desire to get behind a wheel.
Do you remember the whole process of driving lessons and passing your tests and exactly what that felt like, Ronnie?
Yeah, no, I remember that really well. I was just so eager to get my driving license and I'd done like one of them intense courses. So. Yeah. Every day for a week, however long it was, the guy would pick me up, we'd do our stuff, and he went, you're going to pass, blah, 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 blah. So I was like, fine. We go to the test, and it gets cancelled. And I was devastated. I was like, oh. You know, because I'd already bought my car. I bought the car. Mm. But when I passed my test, I'm literally like in that car, and I'm gone.
And what was it? What did you buy?
I bought a 318. It was a black BMW and I paid £7,000 for it. And the insurance was more than the car. So I ended up paying £7,200 insurance. And I was like, how can that be right? But I didn't care at the time. I was like, I just need some wheels, you know. In hindsight, I probably would have gone for something a little bit less.
A bit less leery.
Yeah.
You should have gone to Adrian Flux, mate, for your insurance. Obs.
Spend like £7,000, like more money on insurance for a car. I'd never dream of doing that now. But at the time, you kind of just think, I just want it. I've got to have it.
And did you pass first time?
Yeah, I passed first time, yeah. I didn't think I would, though, because I made a mistake. And I was like, he's going to fail me on that.
How about you, Dave?
Yeah, no, first time. Yeah. And I was worried that I might be a little bit too confident because I think, like all of us, I'd done a bit of driving beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, I'd driven in car parks with my dad. I'd driven on farms with mates. I'd done quite a lot of stuff behind a wheel sort of at the age of 12, 13, 14. So therefore, there's a danger, though, that sometimes that can work against you in a test situation where actually you think you know it too much and you're overconfident. But actually, I managed to get through. I still remember to this day passing my test and a mate of mine came and picked me up in his 1.1 Popular Plus Fiesta and he goes, there you go, you can drive home. I'm not entirely sure how that works in terms of the insurance, but let's sort of skip over that for a second. He kind of said, you can drive home, and I just thought, this just feels magical. Here I am, I'm actually out on the road, I'm not in a lesson, and I'm street legal. And it was just such a feeling of freedom. It's amazing.
Yeah. Third time for me.
Third?
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you think that was overconfidence?
But the first one absolutely definitely was, yeah.
Was that the power slide in that 8 mile an hour going around
a roundabout? A little bit heel and toe on a down change. But the bloke says, I mean, literally, the bloke, I can remember him saying, no, no. And I said, mate, are you mad? And he said, no, you're too confident. No, you'll have to wait another month. Yeah. And then the next one, I was too nervous because I didn't want to fail again.
So he was teaching you a lesson, was he?
Yeah, he was actually, yeah. He was.
Hypothetically and literally.
Yeah. But, you know, I remember that. I remember, you know, the great day, wasn't it, when we got our licences and we had a car to go out and drive. Brilliant days.
So what followed the black BMW then, Ronnie?
After that, I kind of got a bit sensible, and I got given a sponsored car, so I didn't have to worry about buying or paying for the insurance, and that was a 216 Rover.
Right? That's a stinker of a motor, isn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't great, but, you know, for me, I was like, because the BMW was quite old, but the BMW, I thought that's okay. And then this one was kind of newer car, but it obviously wasn't such a high-performance sort of flashy car. I had some fun in it, you know. I was like up curbs here, there, and I didn't really care because it wasn't mine either. So I didn't really give a monkey's, you know. When I give it back, they must have given it a looking over and going, never giving him another car.
Do you know what? I've had that. I've had people look at me like that before. Just a couple of times.
Jason, I'd never want a car back after you've had it, mate. I'd be giving a car with you, mate.
Well, yeah, they do have a hard time.
But that's what they say when they like, because I love driving, I love my track driving, and I like to like give the car a bit of stick, given the right sort of roads and time and wherever you are. And I just sometimes think, oh, pity the guy that's going to have to buy this car off of me, you know? They've all been abused.
So, BMW, 212 Rover.
Yeah.
When did the first like proper sexy thing come along?
Oh, well, sexy for me, it was a new model 325i cabriolet.
Oh, nice.
I think I paid about 25,000. So it was probably about 6 months old when I bought it.
Yeah.
But it was like my dream car, 3 Series, convertible, yeah. Top of the range, 2.5 litre, and I was like, you know, it was a blue colour. Can't remember the name of the blue. And it had like light grey leather. And I was I just couldn't believe it. I felt like I made it then, you know.
And what age are you then, Ronnie?
I was probably 18 at the time.
Okay.
18, yeah.
Great car.
Yeah, and then from then I was kind of hooked on BMW, so I eventually went to like the M3. So I had about 2 or 3 M3s after that, but they were just a phenomenal car. The M3, I just remember thinking, wow, this is just on another level, you know?
Yeah.
Do you know what? That actually, to go from your car journey to end up relatively quickly in M3, I mean, that was my dream car when I was a kid at M3. Mm. Oh, in fact, not even a kid, actually.
Still is mine.
Yeah, it's a car you always lust after.
Yeah.
That was a great car. It was fantastic.
And did you keep it on the island or did you spit it off at all?
Because
they're a bit lively on the rear, weren't they?
Yeah, the rear was fine. It was actually okay. I never, ever had an accident in the M3. But I did have an accident in my 325 Wild once, but that was just crazy. I was only young and we was in Blackport at the time, and I remember it was in the hotel drive and I kind of just picked up speed and I didn't realise there was like these speed humps and I just kind of just took off basically and I was just in mid-air and I could just see this hotel in front of me. Can't remember what it was called. Big roundabout with a big sign, welcome to, I think it's called the village or something. And I just remember just ploughing straight into it. And I kind of got out and I looked at the car and I just thought, Jesus Christ, what's happened here? My wheels, I couldn't see them. They'd kind of like buckled underneath the car and there was just smoke coming out of it. And I just went, right, you know, and I just got in the hotel and the police came and whatever, you know, just as long as no one was hurt. But that was the only... It was quite weird. Yeah, I never had no accidents in the M3, but I did in the 325i. So maybe that was why I didn't have an accident in the M3. I can kind of realise you've got to be a bit careful. That was a long wait to get that car back as well. I think it was about 15 weeks. And and as it happens, I ended up smashing up the hired car as well. They gave me a hired car. I ended up having an accident in that as well. So, it was crazy, you know. Just not a safe driver at that time. But I am now. And there's a story to tell as well about why I've become a better driver as well. So.
Oh, go on then. I think that cues it up perfectly.
Well, because I kept losing my licence and through speeding. So I lost it about 3 times, I think, you know, for going quite fast as well. The best one was, I think I was on the motorway coming back from Bournemouth. And I was doing about 110, something like that. Not going too mad. This is about 1 o'clock in the morning. I just got beat. And as I'm driving through, there was a bridge going above the motorway. And as I'm going through, I've just seen the car pull off. And I thought, that's got to be the police.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm screwed now. So I just might as well just go. And this, I was in room three, so I put my foot down and I went, woof, and I just thought, I'll try and come off at the next exit and just kind of just pull over somewhere, just chill out for a bit and just pretend like, you know, like nothing's happened. Anyway, I'm going, and I can see this car behind sort of like trying to sort of keep up with me. And as I kind of forward, in front of me, there was two police cars that just basically blocked the motorway off.
Oh, you're joking.
Well, proper roadblock.
Yeah, so I thought, I'm done here. I thought, oh, I can't, you know, there's no point trying to get past these two. They're not shooting me. So I pulled over and the guy got out of the car and he said, we were doing like 140 or whatever it was. And he was getting away from us. I said, to be honest with you, officer, I said, I've only just got the car. So, you know, I didn't realise the speed that these things do. I said, you know, and... Anyway, I kind of half tried to bribe him with some tickets to Dubai.
Do you know what? I was sat here thinking to myself, I wonder if he's pulled a stunt with like a queue in the back.
Yeah,
or something.
I tried. I thought, I'm done now. I thought, I'm all in. So I've got to try and pull any trick I can. And he was like, listen, he said, I can't. He said, the helicopter's been called out. And said, you know, we've got to kind of do what we got to do. And he was feeding my tyres as well. I remember him feeding the tyres and he went quad air up. And then the engine, he was like, they pulled it up. So they knew, you know, and I went, anyway, listen, they done me at an average of about 133 mile an hour. I was going a lot faster than that.
So you were thinking, I'll take that, to be honest with you, weren't you?
Yeah, well, I got a year ban. I deserved it. You know, I was like 20 at the time and I just lost a smooth amount. I just wanted to get home, you know, and the roads were empty. So anyway, yeah, that kind of forwarded on. So I had a few of them, maybe three of them. And then my mate said to me, he said, look, he said, you're forever going to be losing your license. He said, I know you like your cars. I said, yeah. But right, go on this driving course. The guy's name was John. John Lyons, his name was, and basically trained the police, the you know, the ones that...
Yeah, pursuit drivers. You
know, like an advanced driving course. Yeah.
Advanced, yeah. So he trains all them. So he said, go and have 2 days with him. So we'd start at 8 a.m. and finish at 6 p.m. After the first day, I was exhausted. You know, because he's got just basically just retraining you. So you kind of have to unlearn everything that you thought was right. In the end, he had me looking under cars. So I'm driving down a side street and saying, look under the cars just in case you can see some feet, you know. So, like, whereas before I just fly down this side street, he's like, no, there could be someone there. Da, da, da. So he kind of like brings to life all the different sort of, you know, you just got to be just aware that there's pedestrians about, and I had 2 days with him, and since then I've never had a point in my life, and I'm much more respectful of what a car can do. And,
oh, that's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, it's the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah,
because you can still have your fun, but you just have to pick and choose. And the best bit of knowledge he gave me was he said we might be driving in a 60, but it's all about linking speed with vision. He said, so if you can't see around that bend, there's no point doing 60. He said, you've got to be able to stop just in case someone's coming around the other side and he's out of control, so you can avoid the accident. Mm.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So I'm so much more, I'm a lot safer driver. I've got no points. And it's, you know, it's important, you know, because they're dangerous tools, a car, you know, in the wrong hands.
Absolutely. And do you know what? How on tune is this, Dave? Because we were speaking about this yesterday, weren't we? You know, my two girls are 11 and 13, and it won't be long before they're going to want to start driving. But, yeah, I'm probably not the best example, you know, drive like dads. So I'm now starting to think, oh, my God, you know, that moment's going to arrive in no time. I might get you to come around and have a chat with my girls, Ronnie, because I'm going to drive slower now, having talked to you.
No, I mean, do you know what? I actually have more fun driving now because I feel a lot safer. I feel like I'm not putting anyone in danger. And there are certain roads where we went, look, you said, these are B roads. He said, there's no one out here. He said, as long as it's a straight road and whatever, you know, there's no speed cameras. You can have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of like choosing the right places to do it. So, yeah, listen, it was the best thing I ever done, you know.
Have you got a clean license, Dave?
Yes, I have. I have currently. I've had points in the past. I think I've been up to 6 before at one point. But, I'm all clean at the minute and have been for a good few years. Ronnie, in terms of now, and obviously you being a safe and educated driver, what's on the O'Sullivan Rocket Drive at the minute?
Right, at the moment, I've got the R8 V10, whatever it is, supercharged.
Yep.
I love that car. I just love that car. I think last time I saw you, Jason, I had it there.
Yeah, you're in it, yeah. Lovely car.
You had the Porsche Turbo at the time, and... Yeah. you know, I know the Porsche is a more of a driver's type of car because you get the back end out, but it just felt a little bit small inside, whereas the R8, I just feel like I'm much more space, a bit more mm-hmm. like being in a Bentley, if you like, inside. But the performance of it, for me, it just sort of like, I get a lot of fun out of it, you know. So I've had them for probably like the last, I don't know, 10, 12 years. I've had an R8 every year. I've always had one.
Fabulous engine.
It just feels, the noise and the, it's just such a... Just such a great car.
Do you know what? It was like, was it? Not last year, year before, I did a review on the new R8 V10, and there was some really sad news which came with that that review, and that is they're not going to make any more.
I know.
And such a shame, because that V10 is just the most glorious engine.
Well, I've told them at Audi, I said, look, when the very last R8 V10 you're making, I want it. So, because I know they're not making it no more, and I just was like, you know, I'll get what I can out of it, and then obviously try and...
Oh, hang on to it, yeah.
Obviously, it's only a two-seater, so I've always, because I travel a lot and, you know, kids and blah, 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 I've always had a four-seater. So, as well, and I had it for the last 7, 8 years now, I've had a RS4 Avant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cracking
car. It's like my everyday car, so it's got like 80,000 miles on it. Nearly sold it last year for a C43, but then COVID hit, cancelled it, and then my mate said, why are you selling that for that? And I went, you know what, you're right, I cleaned it up, it looked nice, it was like a brand new car, and I cancelled the C43, and I've still got the RS4, V8, great engine, good car.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with them. I mean, they're fantastic, aren't they?
You know, it's too good to sell in a way. You know, it's too good to sell.
Yeah. Do you find you get attached to cars long-term, Ronnie? Do you find that when you find something that you really like the RS4 and like the R8, that you've got no desire to change them?
No, I used to change my R8 every year. I'd go, like, every year, brand new one, every year. That's what my dad used to do, and I'm not sure that's probably a good thing to do, but I'm just kind of like, it's what you grow up seeing, I suppose, and you just kind of think it's normal every year, every August the 1st, new reg, you know.
Yeah.
Get a new car.
Yeah.
But then I kind of like, I just thought a couple of times, you know, the worst thing I'd done was I sold a 500 SL and I had it for 2 years and loved it and bought an SL55 and hated it. And I paid double the money. I sold the SL for 50, bought the 55 for about 110 and hated it. And I thought, what have I done? I've just paid double for a car that I don't really like. It kind of felt a bit overpowered. So I kind of thought, you know, unless I'm 100% sure that by getting rid of this car, that the replacement is going to be better, then just don't do it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of like the mindset for me now when it comes to cars.
Well, do you know what? That kind of answers my next question, which was going to be, you know, if you had to pick one car and stick with it for the rest of your life, I guess it would be the R8 V10, eh?
Well, yeah, but it's obviously not an everyday, it's quite a selfish kind of car because it's only two seater. So how practical that would be when you've still got children, I don't know. But if I could choose... My favourite car that I've ever had, I would definitely say it would be the R8 V10. But if I had to go for a four-seater, I think my best four-seater four-door would have been the M3, because I think that's a kind of good compromise. Right. And when I spoke to you, Jason, and Tiff at that 50-year day, I was like, I said, well, you've got Audi, Merc and BMW. I said, like, you're obviously the driver, so you know more about cars than I could ever dream of knowing. And you kind of said to me, BM first, Merc second, Audi third. And that's because you're a driver, you're coming from that perspective. So I kind of, that's always stuck in my mind that, you know, if ever I had to get an everyday car, probably the M3 would be the type of car to go for.
I think you're right. And I think I'd be in agreement.
Unless you've changed your mind, Jason, since
then. No, well, do you know what? I mean, they're great bits of kit, aren't they? In fact, any German car, to be honest, make the best cars in the world.
What's the new... there's one car at the moment that my friend has got. It's the electric Porsche, and it's a four-door, but it looks like a 911.
Yeah, it's called a Taycan. It is extraordinary.
Is it?
It is absolutely phenomenal. The quickest road car I've ever driven.
Oh, okay, wow.
It's ridiculous.
definitely speak to your local Porsche dealer and go for a test drive because they are phenomenal. Mm.
Ronnie, before we let you go, our final question for myself and JP is the fact that we've always said that music and cars go very well together, we think. So we need your fantasy drive. Where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And most importantly, what are you driving?
Yeah.
Right, I'm driving the R8 V10. I'm probably up in Peak District.
Yep.
Nice.
I'm going across the Snake Pass.
Mm.
So I'm going from Sheffield to Manchester.
Yep. Oh, that's a great road.
It's amazing. I mean,
that is a belting road.
Oh, mate, that is just sensational. I've got a friend that lives in the Peaks, and whenever I'm on Sheffield, I'm like, I just love making that journey.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just incredible. And then I'm probably listening to a bit of Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe a bit of Prince, a bit of Tupac.
Like it.
Mate, that is one of the all-time classic roads. It's mega.
I mean, I know people that are not confident. They're confident drivers, but I send them across the Snake Pass. And I'm like, oh, please don't send me that way again. And I get that because you can look down and think, if this goes wrong, I'm going off the side of a mountain. But you know, that's what makes it even more exciting for me. You know, it's just sort of like the twist and the bends and just like, you know, it calls on a little bit of driving skill. You know.
Oh, definitely. And also, you can see through the corners, can't you? You know, when you're coming down some of the passes, you just know there's nothing there because you can see it over and atop. And oh, it's fantastic, isn't it? I'm thinking 6 o'clock in the morning, sun's just coming up, no one's on the roads.
Oh. Yeah, beautiful. Amazing, perfect.
I think on that note, Jason, you need to take us out.
Right, that's it for this episode of Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Thanks to you, Dave, as always. And a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Thanks, JP. It's been great chatting. Always a pleasure, mate. Always a pleasure.
Cheers, buddy.
Absolutely. Superb to have you on, Ronnie. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you liked what you've heard today, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da!